You are listening live, ladies and gentlemen, to the KKFI Arts Magazine show and program. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on a very nice Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, community radio station, right here in Kansas City. We have a couple of very talkative guests on the show today. I probably won't have to say very much at all with the folks that I'm having on today.
Mike, you're through.
That's right. Probably will be. Yeah, we're going to talk about several interesting topics today. Carl DiCapo is with him. Now, that's a name you should recognize. His Italian Gardens restaurant, many years was downtown, and Carl, we're going to ask Carl some about that later, but Carl is now the membership chairman of the Native Sons and Daughters Organization of Kansas City, and they do a lot of things. Carl is on boards. He raises money for organizations, the World War II Museum, Catholic Charities. Oh, name a few more that I can't think of right now.
How about the Crime Commission of Kansas City?
That's important.
The Park Department. We do that. In fact, we just fixed, we had 48 fountains, and 8 of them worked. Now we've got them all working. Cost about $4 million, but we're the city of fountains. So we need to do these things. You know, and it continues on, and all the things that need to be happening. That's what we're doing with the Crime Commission when we start the second chance, because we used to have 4,000 prisoners come out of prison and come to Kansas City, and within 3 years, 83% went back into prison. Well, with the help of Bill Dunn and all the people of Kansas City, now, this last the last couple of months, 1,900 prisoners came, but only 5% will go back. So you basically, you know, you have to do this for mankind and make Kansas City a better place.
Yeah, you also helped. You're one of several people who helped save the Liberty Memorial. Memorial was not always as successful as it is now.
Well, I was a park commissioner with Ollie Gates and Anita Gorman, and we were there, and we had to close it because the deck got to be an eighth of an inch, and we knew that we had to fix it. So we went to the city. The city had no money, but we needed $5 million to do this. And we hired others, but we couldn't get it done. So consequently, they were going to tear it down. And they said, no, don't do this. Well, long story short, we went down to Jeff City and spoke to Ronnie DePasco and talked to the people there. And they decided that they weren't going to give us some money. And then we embarrassed them by telling them, you know, you don't want to do this? That's fine. We're going to build the finest home for veterans in the United States right here in Kansas City. They gave us $5 million before left, and 3 months later they gave us another $10 to make the museum there, and today it's considered one of the five best in the United States, and that's because we're from Kansas City.
That's right. You're a big supporter of Kansas City. You are. Currently, you are the membership chairman of the Native Sons and Daughters Organization of Kansas City. Basically, what do the Native Sons and Daughters do?
We do the great things. We put plaques up for the outstanding things that's happened in the city. We have over 100 of them that we've had. Every year, we put one or two up. We just recently just put one up for the Crime Commission, and that's down at the President Hotel. We put one at Swope Park for the ethnic group. We put two of them right there for the Jazz Hall of Fame, and we also put one there for the Negro Hall of Fame. So we tell the people who we are, what we are, and what we do, and tell the people what? How Kansas City came to be. You know, it's a great thing that what we've done in this past with this thing there with the Native Sons that we were speaking of. The Native Sons came here and they decided that they had to help people and tell the people why Kansas City is what it is today. And every year we have an outstanding Kansas Cityan. One or two people, we do that. And this has been going on for some 30 or 40 years. And by doing this, when I was made president, I asked, where do you honor these people? And they said, we don't have a place. Well, I said, let's build a monument. They said, we don't want it to cost too expensive. I said, I'll raise the money. That's the worst thing I've ever said in my life. I'll raise the money. Anyway, we went all over. We had this thing designed. A great guy, Gary Hicks, designed it for us. And we had all these great people, Chuck Eddy and a group, our people. And we did this, and we said, okay, we're going to do it. We went to five different locations, and each one they threw us out and said, no, you can't do it. So I went to Troy Schulte, our city manager, and I said, I feel like Moses. I can't land. And he says, where do you want to be? So we did. We built it right there on Isles Davis Park. Beautiful, beautiful park. And we built it, and I thought I could do it for $50,000. It ended up costing over $550,000. It is a remarkable monument telling the history of Kansas City. Why us? Why us? You know, here we are between St. Joe and Independence, two great cities, and us. And what happens? How did we do this? Well, we got the bridge. When we got the bridge, then that was it. And from then on, we've just gone forth. And you had great people that did what they had to do. You know, the plaza. How about that? How about Mr. K? How about all these great people that you have today, Bill Dunn, Mr. Block, the people that have done things like that. And we honor these people. So basically what we're doing now, we're doing a series in right at the memorial, and that'll be Thursday night, this coming Thursday, the 28th, at from 6 to 8, and come down and enjoy it with us, and listen to what we are, and make you proud to be who you are and why you're here. But we can do this. And we got Italian sausage from Shemeika's, my nephew. We've got hot dogs. We've got water. We have DiCapo's Italian cookies that you're going to have. Come down, and we'll tell you this. And this is what's going to happen for the next 4 months. And then next month, we're going to have one right there at July the 26th, and we'll have one in August and September. And we're telling the people, why not come down and have a great time and learn why we and everyone wants to come to Kansas City today?
Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to tell the people it's Thursday.
Thursday.
From 6 to 8 o'clock p.m., June 28th, at the Isles Davis Park. If you've never noticed it before, that's the one that's around 10th and Oak. It's just north of City Hall on the west side of the park. That's where you'll be having your gathering, and I assume that's probably where the monument is as well.
Sure, and right there, but you don't have to worry about parking because that time of night you can park anywhere there after 6 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
You can park on 10th Street, you can park on Oak, you can park on Locust, and be right there with us when we do. And just amazing. And if you come in there and spend an hour any other time or so, it'll tell you history of the city that you'd be amazed by. I was amazed when I saw this and understand it, of how this thing happened, how we got the livestock exchange, and how we've got this, and how we got this, and how we got this, and no one else has. And that's why people today are understanding who we are and what we're doing. It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
You mentioned Ewing Kauffman before. Just think about what we wouldn't have if it weren't for you. We wouldn't have a baseball team, that's for sure.
No.
We wouldn't have the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, the business school, various other charities. A lot of kids wouldn't have had scholarships to college. All because of Mr. Kauffman.
And you understand that we'd like to have Julia Irene come down and speak tonight and explain to you why her father did this. And all the same thing, like Bill Dunn and Henry Block and Ed Matheny, have them come down and tell us why they did as such. And then you got Julia Irene, you know, you've got Kate Callison, her grandfather started the plaza. Wouldn't you like to know how that happened? What about my great friends Anita Gorman and Ollie Gates? Anita Gorman is a great woman of the North, and Ollie Gates is just a remarkable, remarkable man. what he's done in that area. We're along on 47th Street. And
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
So we'll do that and try to understand that. You know, I even might have my friend Tom Ward that just sold his business for some $3 billion for Russell Stover's Candy.
Oh.
But how he got there and what happened there. And, you know, you'll learn things besides that. Besides that, though, you'll get good food and we'll give you a little of the Italian Gardens handshake, you know, but about that. I was at the Italian Gardens for 46 years, and I was just telling Mike some of the great stories that you had there. But anybody who was anybody came in the gardens, and we used to have that long table in the front, and we called it the Sabenediga table, which in Italian means God be with you. We have over 2,400 people from all over the world were members of that club. Yeah. Just a remarkable
My
thing.
Friend and yours, Pat Patton, took me down there one time. Jack Stedman was in there.
Oh, Jack.
He is the tallest man I've ever seen.
Jack Stedman. Well, I used to get the, you know, all the wrestlers there. And they would come in, and they came in there. They loved it. Just great people.
For those who are too young to remember Jack Stedman, he was the first president and general manager of the Chiefs.
That's the truth.
I don't know how else to say it. He was Carl Peterson on steroids.
Yeah,
that's
really
how big of an individual he was, not just around here, but around the country, around the National Football League.
And we get all the people from Channel 9 used to come in afterwards, you know, because of the fact that they're there and we were right around the corner from them. So they would come in and working at 6 o'clock and the 10 o'clock. Well, you know, the great quarterback that we had, our boy, number 16, Dilly Dawson, he'd come in and have dinner. Well, I used to bring my Boy Scouts in and have lunch and dinner there. And one night, a little boy was sitting next to me, but Mr. Dawson came in and sat next to him, and I thought he was going to die. And he sat there, and he said, "Can I use your phone?" He calls his mother and says, "You don't know who's sitting next to me." Great story.
Oh, it was always exciting to meet him. I've met him several times.
He's
great. Tell me, I know we don't have a lot of time, and we have a lot of things to cover, but tell me your Frank Sinatra story.
Frank Sinatra, one night, I closed the restaurant. My cousin normally worked at night, but he was on vacation, so I closed it. And we didn't get out there till 1:30. You know, when we locked the door, then we started cleaning the kitchen. You could eat off the floor by the time we finished, and it was nothing. So you come in the next morning, my five Italian women would come in and redo and making all the pastas and everything else that they did. But we didn't have to worry about them coming into a place that wasn't clean. So I walk up 12th Street, and we had this gentleman that was a doorman there, a Greek fellow, and I stopped and sat and talked to him. He said, "Carl, what happened? Busy night?" I said, "Jammed. Just jammed." I said, "We had a good night." Well, leaning across, next to the building, was a gentleman with his hat pulled down, smoking a cigarette, and one of his legs up against the wall. So I told the guy, I said, "Is that one of your patrons?" He said, "That's Frank Sinatra." "Really? Frank Sinatra?" So I walk over. I said, "Mr. Sinatra," I said, "my name is Carl DiCapo, and I'm honored and thrilled that you come to Kansas City." So he says, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm one of the partners of an Italian restaurant right around the corner." He said, wait a minute. "It's not the Italian Gardens." I said, "Yes, it is." He says, "When I told everybody that I was coming to Kansas City, they said, 'You got to stop at the Gardens. You got to stop at the Gardens.'" Well, we got to be great friends. And then after that, every time he performed here in Kansas City, we would send food down to all his entourage. So the last time he was here, I bought 100 tickets for all my all my guests and employees and all. And the gentleman came to me and said, "Carl, if you want to meet Mr. Sinatra afterwards," he says, "he's going right out that door there, and he's got five people surrounding him, because his car is right outside, and he's going to fly back to California tonight." So I told my sister, I said, "Carol, you ought to come, and he's going to go out." So she took her two daughter-in-laws, and they stood there, and he sang "My Way," and he's leaving. So as he goes by, he looks and sees the three girls standing there, and he says, "Ladies, did you happen to catch my show?" And my sister Carolyn Verbilia says, Mr. Sinatra, she says, I've been in love with you since 16. I was 16 years old. She says, I'm with the Italian Gardens, and we're the ones that sends the food. He went over, put his arms around her, and kissed her on the lips, and she'd been walking. She walked 5 foot off the ground for the next year. That was great, really. Now, the Chiefs came in one night. I didn't know who they were, but they came in, and you could see that they were all athletes, and we had one black person with them and one woman. So I seated them there, and they called me over and says, tell us what to eat. We're strangers in town. So I told them everything that we had. I said, we got great meal, and we got all great pastas and such. And okay, so we did this, and I explained to them and all. So afterwards, he calls me over, this one gentleman, and he says, that's probably one of the best meals we've ever had. We need to thank you so very much. I said, who are you? And he says, I can't tell you. I said, what do you mean you can't tell me? He says, we're not supposed to say. I said, I'm Sicilian. I don't say nothing to nobody. So he says, we're the Dallas
Cowboys.
What? Not Cowboys again. No.
What, the Dallas Texans?
Dallas Texans. Okay. So he says, we are. He says, I'm Kenton Dawson. Really?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And here's my wife. He introduced my wife. And he said, the guy right here, the black kid, he said, that's the great running back, Abner Hayes. And all of them introduced themselves to me. So at that point in time, I knew who they were. And he said, we're going to be called the Chiefs after your mayor. They call him the chief. I said, that's right. Roe Bartle. I said, he's the chief. He said, that's the way it's going to happen.
Yeah, for those who don't know, before the Chiefs were the Chiefs, they were the Dallas Texans.
Right,
Lamar
Hunt
moved the whole team up to Kansas City. But we have a lot to thank these people for. The Chiefs wouldn't be here if it weren't for the Hunt family. The Royals wouldn't be here if it weren't for the Kauffman family, the Performing Arts Center, and the various other things that he funded. All the money they got from the sale of the Royals went into a charitable trust.
Well, what happened one night, Bishop Penn called me and said, I want you to, we're building a new high school out in Lee Summit, and I want you to chair it. I said, well, I work with Bill Dunn. So he says, okay. So we had a lunch in there, and I had a guy sitting next to me, and we're going to build this thing for $16 million. So this guy says, one of them got up and spoke, and then this guy next to me said, can I speak? Well, sure, right ahead. What happened? He says, my family's been here for 50 years. He said, all they've done is take money out of Kansas City. He said, we've taken a lot of money. We've done that. We had Worlds of Fun. What? And he says, my name is Lamar Hunt Jr., and here's a check for $3 million. Mm. And that's basically how I met him at that time, you know. And then we're talking about that. One night, my friend, we were talking, and he used to be the announcer, the Irish fellow.
Oh, Mike Murphy?
No, Mike Murphy.
Not our Mike Murphy here at KKFI, but Mike Murphy, right. The longtime radio host at KCMO.
Right.
And other places.
He came in with Danny Hogarty, and he said, Carl, can I speak to you for a minute? Yeah. So I told the boys, I'd watch the floor, will you? They want to talk to me. So Mike says, Carl, Danny and I were talking. This is the largest city in the United States that doesn't have a St. Patrick's Day parade. And I said, yeah, and it's your fault. He said, what do you mean my fault? I said, you're on the radio every afternoon for 2 hours. You want a parade? Just tell them we're going to have a parade, and we'll all be there. And Danny Hogarty says, yeah, and we're going to start right here at 11th in Baltimore, and we'll go down to my place, and we'll call it a block and a fifth. I didn't know the fifth was for money, I mean for whiskey, or it was only a part of a block. So we did that. And the first week, the first year that we had that, we had 17 people in it. And now 17, we had 16 and a dog, and we counted the dog as a person. But Mike was a great friend. I used to be there two or three times a month. They'd call me, and we'd talk about it, you know. We did the cattle drive, and the cattle all got loose, and we were on every nation, company in the United States because they found out that these cattle were going every direction, and everybody knew in the United States about Kansas City with the cattle drive.
Well, I remember reading about that in the paper. Yeah. Cattle were on the loose in downtown Kansas City.
Right. Now I'm with the Catholic Charities, and it's a great organization. We do so much for so many people. The nice thing about it is the fact that we help, and 85% are not Catholic. You know, we don't. And Jesus Christ didn't ask you what your religion you were, if you were even going to help you. And that's basically what we do. And we're going to have a gala this year, and it's going to be fantastic and super. You know, my nephew, Kevin Pastilli, gives me the place down there. We got a great place. We do great things. The last 2 years, we've honored all the parish priests. We had 48 of them, and last year we had over 80 nuns. No one has ever honored the nuns. No one. And we did that. We're talking now to Columbus, Knights of Columbus. We want to do something for those people. You know, they're great people. They do everything. And that's what we're looking for. We're trying to help the people that do what do and help other people. That's the thoughts that you have in this city. And that's the truth, because you understand we're considered one of the best cities in the United States for raising money. We do this. That monument that we had, I thought we could do it for $50,000. It ends up costing over $550,000, and we raise that money in no time at all. When you told them about it, it's going to be for Kansas City, when they heard that, people were just throwing money at it.
Sure.
So it works.
You're so good at raising money. Do you have a secret? How do you get people to give that much money?
Well, I stood in front of that restaurant for 46 years, and I knew everybody in Kansas City. And then the thing about the Liberty Memorial, when the park department hired these two great companies in New York to come in and raise money so that we could repair it, and they couldn't get the money. And we hired two from here. They couldn't get the money. We were just lucky enough to have a friend by the name of Ronnie DePasco, who was a senator from my district. And I called him and asked him, and he said, "Carl, we don't have any money. We can't do anything." And I said, "Ronnie, we have to do this." "No, we don't have it." So I said, "Well, what about the poor veterans?" He said, "Did you say veterans?" "Yes." "Did you save veterans?" "Yeah." "They have $93 million. "How?" "Well, every time you go on a gambling boat, it's $2. That money is split between early childhood, the Missouri Highway Patrol, and the veteran. They got $93 million. I said, "When did they meet?" He said, "You're very fortunate. They meet 2 weeks from tonight here." I said, "Put me on the agenda." He says, "You're on." So Ollie Gates, Ollie Gates and Mark McHenry and John Owens, we go down and we meet them. And you got all the senators and representatives sitting there, and you got all the veterans. And who's in wheelchairs, and who's this, and who's that, okay? So Ollie gets up and thanks him for allowing us to come and speak, and John Owens shows a 7-minute clip on World War I, and I get up and I said, "Let's cut to the chase. I know that you got $93 million, and we need $5 million of it for the Liberty Memorial." And he says, "Sorry, but that's earmarked for nursing homes and cemeteries." I said, "I don't want all your money. All I want is $5 million. I'm sorry we can't give it to you." I said, "Okay." I said, "Before I leave, I want to tell you something." I said, "I sit there and watch all you veterans holding onto the fence because we took your home, yes. We took your wives. We took your lives. We took your sons. We took your jobs. But you don't care about that, do you? You don't care about that. Well, let me tell you, we're going to build the finest home for veterans in the United States here at the Liberty Memorial, with you or without you." Before I left, they gave us $5 million. And then 2 months later, they gave us $10 million. Now, Mr. Cleaver was the mayor, and he had told us, if you raise $5 million, I'll put it on the ballot in Kansas City and let them vote on it. So we went up and showed it to him. We had the monies and all. So we said, do you have to get now? He said, I'll put it on the ballot. It's fault, okay? Now, I said, well, you have to get 51% of the vote. No, you got to get 60% of the vote. Okay? So what happens? The day of the election, we had a veteran with the American flag standing there, and we got 64% of the vote. We got $45 million,
wow.
$30 million for an endowment, and $15 million to fix it up.
Can you imagine Kansas City without the Liberty Memorial? Say yes. They had torn it down. Can you imagine what a blow that would be?
Just now, if you look at it, it's just gorgeous. It's beautiful. And every year for the last 4 or 5 years, they've increased it and increased it and increased it. And everyone in the country is coming to see it. It's a remarkable place. It's considered one of the 5 best in the United States.
Yeah. Well, I could easily talk to you for several hours, but we don't have that. Okay, but let's review now the special night of Kansas City history, 6 to 8 o'clock p.m. at the intersection of 10th and Oak. That's the Ilis Davis Park. It's just north of City Hall on the west side of the park. That's when the festivities will be going on. They will install the memorial plaque there at that time. The organization honors individuals and have put up more than 60 special historic plaques marking special historic sites and buildings around the Kansas City area. They have a speakers bureau. I guess contact them for that. They have people that will come around and talk, and you can get a map of where all the historical markers are. They're on the web at nsdkc.org, and you can learn more about what's going to be happening on Thursday, what the organization does. You know, you could join the organization if you like what you hear, and you can meet Mr. DiCapo and learn all about from him and other people all of the outstanding things that they do around the city. Okay?
You're good.
I'm just trying to organize all this.
You're good.
I could easily talk. Come back again sometime. I could easily talk to you for much longer.
About the people at the gardens.
Sure. I've heard many stories.
Oh, they've been fantastic.
And many famous people. Thanks so much for being with us. Carl DiCapo, the membership chairman of the Native Sons and Daughters Organization of Kansas City. In the past, one of the owners of the Italian Gardens restaurant, and on the boards and fundraising committees of many other civic 22 civic organizations. Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of work you put in for all those folks.
As they say in Italian, sub benedica, and that means God be with you.
Yes.
Thank you.
And with you too, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a short break. Then when we return, another very talkative individual will be with us. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. Yes, and I look forward to being there myself. Some of us are coming down there. It's going to be a big event. The Elders, many other bands. I don't have the list in front of me. All celebrating the 30th anniversary of 90.1 FM Community Radio, KKFI. I hope you can make it and be with us on that night. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. What an easy show this is for me to do today. Carl DiCapo is here, a very verbal man, has a lot to say, informed us on a lot of the things that's going on, as is my second guest. You know, I work with this gentleman often. He's done many things. He's been a teacher. Oh, what all have you done, Walter Winch?
Oh, avoided the law. I've traveled around the world. Was a Peace Corps director, writer, teacher, trainer.
In the Caribbean, you were with the Peace Corps.
And South America.
And South America. Boy, you saw things that a lot of people never see.
Oh, I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, so a lot of bad things, probably.
No, lots of good things, mostly really good things.
Well, that's nice. Walter is, he's many things, but he's also become a writer. I know a few years ago he took me aside and said, I'm writing a book. And I remember hearing about your book at that time, but tell us about your book. Was that your first book? Probably not. You've probably written before then.
No, I have a couple novels and a book of short stories published. And yeah, I wrote a grammar book way back in the 80s when I lived in Miami. So I've had a few things published.
Yeah, and but now he's ventured into the play category. Tell us about your play. It's called The Nethermouth Liberation, a love story. And if you know Walter, you know he loves to talk about politics, and I'm sure this is no different.
Yeah, I guess it was last November someone said, why don't you write a play for the Fringe Festival? So I said, okay, give it a try. So after many, many rewrites, we now have a play that is going to be performed.
It's going to be one of the plays presented at the Fringe Festival. It's, I'll just read what Walter said about it. Authoritarianism across the globe and the threat of climate change and the increasing population provides the perfect storm for all life on Earth. So this is set in the future, I take it?
Yeah, it's late 21st century, and it's in a compound for political prisoners. These two individuals are about to face execution, and it's their story.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like 1984, a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure that's an influence somewhere, absolutely.
Yeah. When you were in South America and the Caribbean, you know, some of those governments were fairly repressive. Did you see things like this happening in places where you were trying to help the folks?
Well, yeah, all throughout Latin America, you know, things like authoritarianism, military rule, corruption was rampant. Sure, they were all over the place. That was just part of the world. Of course, we always thought, well, it wouldn't happen in the United States.
Oh, of course it can.
Just impossible.
It's happened in the past. Why wouldn't it happen in the future?
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the play, I'm sure, came about in part because of current events going on across, especially in Europe and here in the United States.
It's directed by Diane Boulan, and it's a presentation of Papelback Productions. Is that you and Diane?
That's right. We're the co-producers of the play.
It's going to happen at the Musical Theater Heritage Stage 2 at the Crown Center Shops. The Crown Center Shops, well, everyone knows where it is, 2450 Grand Boulevard. And the Stage 2 is, American Heartline used to be at the very south end. The Musical Theater Heritage Spaces, and there's more than one, are at the north end there, the one where the big end. But you're in the one that used to be the Martin City Melodrama upstairs.
I'll take your word for it. I've never seen it.
You've never seen it? No. Well, she was there for a while, and I'm happy to say she has another performing space now after looking for so long. But that's where you'll be. You're going to have in the show, well, I wrote some of the names down. Michael Bunn will be with you, Denise Saylor, among others as well. I guess there's two in the show, so there isn't any others. There's just those two.
Just two, a man and a woman who have been thrown together because of their political involvement in creating change in this world run by the corporate state.
Yeah, okay. What kinds of things, why are they thrown in jail to begin with? Maybe I'm asking too many plot questions here.
Well, they try to subvert, you know, the system. The democracy has failed in this world that we're living in, the late 21st century. But there's still resistance to being a commodity, which is pretty much what everyone has become in this late 21st
century. Rather
than an
individual, more of a commodity.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
So
I think it's timely. I think it's thought-provoking.
Yeah, do you see things slowly coming this direction?
If we continue the course that we're on, I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think it's good for anything that represents democracy. No, absolutely not.
Okay. Now, explain for the folks how climate change and the increasing population, which is true worldwide, population is just going bonkers everywhere, seemingly. How does this play into what your vision of the future is?
Well, I think we've had bad situations clearly in the past, and governments being overthrown. But I think today we have two very key elements that are different. We have climate change, the increase in CO2 emissions, the warming of the planet. And I don't believe the population can continue to grow indefinitely. We're well on our way to something like 9 billion people by the end of the century. And I just don't think that's sustainable given what we as humans are willing to do right now. And I think it's the perfect storm, truly the perfect storm this time.
Sure. Yeah, you see a lot of population growth down south of the equator, where you spent some time. What could they do down there? They seem to encourage having more children down there.
Oh, well, you know, that's a complicated question. It's education. It's cultural. It's religious in many cases.
Some religions encourage having more children. It's maybe not the wisest thing to do, but that does happen.
Well, South America, there are countries that are it's slowing up, but until we are willing to make some changes, we are at a tipping point now. I think very clearly that. We could be in real trouble by the end of this century.
Yeah, you're a very good speaker, but you choose to communicate some of these ideas through your writing. Do you feel like you can do more things writing than you can?
That's a great question. I think writers can do a lot more. I think theater itself can do a lot more in terms of presenting some of these issues in a way that resonates, makes sense, and hopefully will inspire a different way of looking at the world we live in.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any choice but to start looking at the world differently if we want to survive as a species.
Very true. Very true. I'd love to hear the story of how all this came about. You've always been an activist. I've always heard you talking about various issues and what you feel strongly about. And I worked with Walter for a number of years now. I've heard him talk about things all the time. Did this idea come to you? Was it a slow working idea? And then how did you? You probably knew Diane ahead of time. I've known her for years.
Well, in fact, it was Diane. Yeah, I've known Diane for many, many years, and it was Diane that said, "Why don't you write a." Write a play for the Fringe Festival. I just sat down at the computer one day and just decided to write. Well, I started writing. I mean, climate change, and then I picked up the memoirs of I can't think of the name. Fanny Hill, which I had read in college, and the ideas started coming together. And what if? You know, so this is really about a play within a play, and we have, 60 minutes at the most to find out what happens. Or maybe we don't find out exactly what happens, but it's got to be brought together. It was a challenge to write. It was something I found interesting to do, and I've never done it before, so I thought, why not? Let's give it a try.
Well, sure.
You know, and writing something that I was interested in.
Sure. Well, that's what the Fringe is for.
Yeah, so exactly.
Trying out things like this. You will have several performances. I think I have them all here. July 21st at 6:30 p.m. July 22nd at 2 o'clock p.m. July 24th at 8 o'clock p.m. July 27th at 6:30 p.m. And July the 28th at 5 o'clock p.m. You can go to facebook.com/Pappleback, PAPPLEBACK, Pappleback Productions, or I suppose you could go for these details at the Fringe website, which is always kcfringe.org. We're speaking with Walter Winch, an actor, a writer, a, a playwright, talking about his play, The Nethermouth, Liberation, a love story. When I think of Walter, I don't think of love stories.
You don't.
He's just, Walter's a very outspoken kind of guy. I don't necessarily associate that with a love story, but I'm sure it fits in. These two people. So there's two people in the show. So everything comes through their eyes, so to speak, in the play. So tell me about the man and tell me about the woman and how they get together. How do they get themselves in this situation, Walter, where they find themselves?
Well, without giving everything away, they both attempted to resist the particular system that now exists in our world in the late 21st century. And eventually they are caught and declared unredeemable. People who are declared unredeemable in this brave new world frequently end up being executed because they serve no purpose according to the system that exists at this particular time.
Now that sounds a lot like Logan's Run. Do you remember Logan's
Run? Well, just, you know, I hope it sounds like a lot of things so people will come and see it.
Yeah, when you reached a certain age, I forget what it was it 39? You were executed because you could no longer serve the status quo.
Yes, absolutely. And this story is about these two people as individuals and how they really got from where they were to facing execution. Uh-huh. In a very unique way in this brave new world that we're living in at the time. Which you have to come and see to find out.
Yeah. Let's talk about the cast, of course. Michael Bunn and Denise Saylor. Did you know these folks? Did you have open auditions for them? How did that work?
Well, Andy Garrison held open auditions, and I did see Denise there, and I thought it struck me that she would be perfect for this character. And Diane knew Michael. She directed the play The Superior Donut at Olathe Theater, I guess, a few months ago. And she thought he would be perfect for the male character. So I heard them read, and I thought they would be terrific for this.
Yeah.
So Diana started rehearsals in a few days.
Yeah. Well, it's getting close. It'll be the third week in July, and we're almost to July. Doesn't time go fast?
It does, especially when you get older.
but you have to be excited about all this. Is this your first professionally produced play?
No. I did one back in Columbia. Back in the 90s, it was called Bring Me the Head of Ernie Dorg. it was a set black humor sort of thing. Had some readings and when I lived in Florida. Yeah, it's not the first, but it is one of many things. I've written both fiction and nonfiction, and I enjoy just going from one thing to another.
Was it which did you like best, really? I know we're plugging the play, but you've written novel style. You've written play style. Now, the differences between them and which one was the easiest for you to write? What do you think?
Well, a novel gives you a chance to really expound on things. It takes a long time. Both the novels took at least a year to write and then rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. It gives you a chance to really develop a story, develop the characters. Well, I found the play, I had to keep rewriting and rewriting, and obviously I asked Diane, I got her input, and, you know, she gave me the input from the point of view of a director. So I think I sputtered a few times and said, I don't want to do this anymore. And then it finally came. It you know, these things tend to come together, and it felt right. It felt good. Yeah, so I like what I have written. Now, whether anyone else likes it remains to be seen.
We'll find out.
We'll find out for sure.
Happening in July at the Musical Theater Heritage Space, which is at Crown Center. You're in number two, so that's upstairs where different productions have been. Most recently, Martin City Melodrama was there. And as I said earlier, I'm happy for her. She's finally found a space that suits her well. I don't know that that space suited the kind of style of show that she does, but she's better in places like that.
Okay,
I think
great.
And but that's where Walter's play will be going on, directed by Diane Boulan, featuring Michael Bunn and Denise Saylor in the roles of these two individuals. Now Walter's been an actor too. In some ways I'm kind of surprised that Walter didn't write a play for himself, because how did Walter Winch get into performing? You've been doing that for a long time. You've been a teacher, but you've also
been an
actor.
Yeah, I have a short attention span, I guess.
Oh, you know. Oh really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, no, I started writing plays when I was like in the fifth grade, you
really?
Know, and then I stopped. Yeah, these things come and go, and I did some acting repertory theater in Miami, in South Florida, way back.
What kind of roles did they put you in?
See, I think it was Commander Harbison in South Pacific. It was a non-singing role, the only one, but I couldn't sing, so they put me there. I did a Václav Havel play, a one-act play, which I really enjoyed doing.
That doesn't surprise me at all. That would be your kind of role.
Yeah, I definitely like that a lot. I've done a couple things, but it's a total blank right now. Oh, The Tenth Man. Paderewski, that was fun.
Oh, Chayefsky.
Yeah,
Would gel well with your personality.
Yeah. I was the sexton, Michael.
I can see Walter saying the line, you know, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
I can take it. Right.
That's the Walter, if you get to know Walter. That's the Walter you get
to
know.
Life is short. Life is interesting. And if you, put yourself out there, why not?
Yeah, what encouraged you to leave the world of academia, which is safe? And, join the Peace Corps and travel the world to do things for people. What was your inspiration? What was that tipping point that got you to do that?
Well, I suppose a lot of the people that I knew way back, I think actually old JFK was an inspiration. Ask not what your country can do for you. I mean, that seems almost a cliche now, doesn't it?
It does.
But that's what we really believed. We didn't want to sell soap suds. You know, we wanted to go out and save the world, which may have been the problem. I think those are the inspirations, and, that's never really left in one form or another. I've always been more interested. I've never been only interested, even though I worked in the corporate world, a number of years. It wasn't something I really wanted to do, ever.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we do things that we have to do.
Sure.
Rather do other things.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did you join the Peace Corps? You're actually a director.
Yeah, I ended up being a director in the Caribbean. And that was really interesting.
What kinds of situations? Well, talk about the first one. What kind of situation did you walk into and... Well, what were your thoughts? Did you think, what have I gotten myself into? This is more of a job than I could ever do. I've heard people characterize it in those kind of terms before.
Well, I went in initially as a Peace Corps volunteer. And then I went to, did some work with a World Health Organization, it was called Pan American Health Organization in South America. I became a director in the Caribbean. You know, these are different kinds of roles. You know, I worked in developing administrative systems in Ecuador and the social security system in Ecuador and the health system in Venezuela. And then, when I became a director, was supervising, hundreds of volunteers as well as developing programs with a host country. And, you know, in agriculture and health and education, it was rewarding. It was, 7 years that I spent overseas. So,
What's the biggest thing we can do for them? I think the problem seems so massive. What would you, if you could give advice to people, what's a couple of the things we could do to help with that situation?
What situation?
Oh, the situation in Latin America.
What do you mean, improving the standard of living?
Mm-hmm. What if you had any advice for people, because we often don't have any idea what we can do as individuals. Well, we can give money, of course. Is there anything else we could do that would help that situation?
Well, I suppose in our system, I suppose supporting governments that want to listen to what people most desire in South America and not try to impose all our values. I mean, our foreign policy in South America for pretty much a long, many years going back to the 19th century was to make the world safe for United Fruit Company. Respecting the views and not thinking that we Americans know it all.
That's true.
That's a simplistic kind of response to your question.
But no, that's all right.
It
seems puzzling sometimes. You know, the problem seems so massive.
They are massive, and they're only going to get worse, I think, because of climate change and because of increasing population. It's going to get worse.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all of these experiences went into Walter's writing, and now you have the presentation of The Nethermouth, Liberation, A Love Story, which will be performed once again July 21st, 6:30 p.m., July 22nd at 2 o'clock p.m., July the 24th at 8 o'clock p.m., July the 27th at 6:30 p.m., and July the 28th at 5 o'clock p.m. at the Musical Theater Heritage Stage 2 in Crown Center Shops. That's the north side of the Crown Center Shops, where you used to walk in and go right and go south to the American Heartland Theater, which we miss dearly. I do anyway. You now go left and go up to the Musical Theater Heritage Space, where they do some fine musicals, but they will have some fringe activities going on there as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this theater.
How'd you land such a good spot? A lot of people, some people are in storefronts and stuff, but Walter Winch gets in the Musical Theater Heritage.
Well, you know, it's based on the size of the cast and technical requirements, and I don't know. I mean, Diane has been involved with the Fringe for some time, but we didn't pay anybody off. I'm pretty sure of that. So I don't know. But I hope many people show up, and I hope they enjoy it and respond to it, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Sure. It's from the world of, this is the way it was characterized, from the world of Fanny Hill's 18th century to an isolated prison compound in the late 21st century for political prisoners. A play within a play. So the characters are writing a play.
You will see when you come to the show.
Walter's teasing us as usual. Well, thanks so much for telling us about it. The Nethermouth, A Liberation, A Love Story, be performed over the Fringe, week of Fringe Productions at the Musical Theater Heritage 2 space. You can learn more about it at facebook.com/Papelbaum Productions or go to the Fringe website. There's a lot of things on the Fringe website, but you can find it if you're patient. kcfringe.org to learn about Walter's play, The Nethermouth Liberation. What does Leathermouth mean? Is there a special meaning there?
It's Old English, and I would suggest you look it up in the dictionary. Yes.
Oh, okay, he's making it hard for us, folks. Thanks so much for being with us. And Walter Winch, an actor, a teacher, a playwright, an author of novels. Anything else on your plate you want to get to?
I have a radio drama on PRX. It's called Ozark Reflections.
Okay. Well, good. He's got a lot of things going on, as you can see. Walter Winch. thanks for being with us here.
Thank you.
On the Arts Magazine Show, Sam Wiseman is with us. He is the Jazz Insider because he has all kinds of inside info. So you might really enjoy listening to him. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.